Hello, welcome to the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Dan Kilpatrick. I'm at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium with Tom Barkley. It's about an hour or so after the 2-1 win over Luton. Another comeback win for Spurs at home, which felt, to me anyway, like it followed a pretty familiar pattern. Although I think where I want to start, Tom, is with Ange Postecoglou's post-match comments. I normally go to the mix zone after the game and try and interview one of the players, but I didn't today. I went and did a press conference with Postecoglou. I asked him if he thought there was a trend or a pattern here, given the Brentford game, the Brighton game and the Palace game. All seemed, in a way, pretty similar to today. Spurs flat, falling a goal behind, but then rallying. And they even had the common factor of Brennan Johnson coming off the bench and making a huge difference. But he was very clear that he doesn't see a trend there. He thinks they were very different games. He said he was happy with the performance. He also said he's not concerned about Spurs' first half displays, even though it's now 12 straight goals they've scored after half-time. Their last 12 goals have all been in the second half. Mm. So, you know, that would seem to me to be an area they need to improve. I mean, yeah, what do you make of all that?
Well, I suppose it depends on how big a sample size you seem to need before you get a trend. I mean, to me, it seems like a trend, particularly against the opposition they've been playing against, the teams they're expected to beat. And let's be honest, they have actually beaten them all, except for the Wolves game. So they have got there in the end, but they just keep shooting themselves in the foot right at the start of the game. You know, during this little run, I've been thinking about the Conte season before it really unravelled, where they kept having these terrible first halves and the second half was much, much better when it was going quite well last season, and wondering if there's some sort of parallels you can draw to this season. But I mean, they were pretty good if you sort of take away the fact that they're expected to be good at home to Luton in this first half. It wasn't like at times last year they were terrible in those first halves under Conte. So I wouldn't say it was quite the same. The way they play, they just create chances. Because they play a much more progressive style. But I did find it quite interesting that at half-time there were some quite notable boos. Now, obviously, you're playing Luton at home, who have actually just scored there for the 18th Premier League game in a row, which people might be a bit surprised to hear. But nonetheless, it is Luton. They are relegation battlers. They are new to the league. And it's Luton. You know, as disrespectful as that might sound, Tottenham got to be beating these kind of teams, and generally people want them to beat them comfortably. So that probably explained why there were some serious grumblings, or more to the point, the fact that they seem to have been here before in the last few home games. But I think that was the first time that I can really remember in the Postecoglou era that there have been some real, not widespread and really loud, albeit that music does drown it out whenever the half-time comes.
I think that's definitely the first time under Ange there have been boos. I think that's fair to say.
I would say so.
And I think you're right. I think it's a kind of Luton thing, isn't it? And with the greatest respect to Luton, and they've been really competitive. That game was pretty typical, I think, of a lot of Luton games this year. They don't get stuffed like Sheffield United have and Burnley have. They tend to lose by a goal. You know, they tend to be in games. But
good goal, too.
Yeah, great goal.
Townsend.
Yeah, absolutely rolling it back. Although Basuma was weak and the whole goal was poor from his first point.
We'll
get onto that. But I think it's a Luton thing. You know, I think a lot of their players are kind of championship level, probably won't be back in the Premier League next year if they go down. So I think that the boos were as much about the opposition as they were about kind of the way Spurs had played. But for me, anyway, like, I appreciate that Ange knows so much more than we do or ever will do. But, you know, there is a kind of trend here. Spurs are kind of quite flat from the start. They look a bit clunky in the final third. They're not being kind of knitted together, as we've talked about so many times in this pod. And they, you know, have tended to fall a goal behind, but then rally. And so often that's kind of coincided, in these home games anyway, with Johnson coming off the bench, kind of having two traditional wingers wide in him and Werner. Ange spoke about that really well as well post-match, I thought, how, you know, that's part of the plan, having those guys kind of wide, hitting the back post, which Kulusevski, by his own admission, kind of doesn't do as well. And I think, you know, that or him, really, in the case of Johnson, turned the game. You know, Luton just found it much harder to kind of deal with with Spurs having sort of three players attacking the key points in the penalty box, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this spell where, again, Spurs have generally got some decent results, but the performances have been, in their entirety, not completely convincing. But Johnson's been one of the biggest sort of positives of this period. We all know he came in for a lot of money, or relatively lots of money, I suppose, in the modern market. It's not astronomical, but it's a lot for Tottenham, that price tag. And I think particularly you were very good at explaining how in the first half of the season, when they were missing other players, it was just a bit too much to ask for him to start every game, and the pressure of that was a bit much for him. But now I think he can really sort of fight for more than this super sub role, but he's playing it very, very well. And that directness that comes with his pace and just the way he plays is a real asset to Tottenham when teams are getting tired. And I think his confidence is just clear for everyone to see how much he is affecting games in a way that he knows he can. Like, I mean, we've seen it in multiple of these games of late. And yeah, like I said, he's the biggest positive. I mean, Timo Werner is the interesting one, and he's not here at the moment. He's down the mix zone, Tom, on that. But he made a good point during the game about Werner, who, I guess, if you're one of the naysayers for not converting his loan into a permanent deal, I think he probably gave you ammunition to support that argument today.
I don't know.
Well, in the first half, anyway.
Let me just finish the point
that Tom was making, was that the perhaps downside of Werner, because he's so quick and so direct in behind, is that Tottenham are playing a bit more direct to him as a result, because they want to use that pace as a weapon, understandably. But I wonder, and this is my suggestion rather than what Tom was saying, if that is part of the reason why James Maddison's performances aren't quite as exciting as they were in the first half of the season. Perhaps it's more to do with that he's still coming to, getting over that injury. But if they are going a bit more direct, maybe he's not, I don't know if stats support this at all, but if he's not being involved as much as he has been in the first half of the season, and whether that's a good thing for Spurs because it's so tempting to use that pace and that option to go direct. It's not like going direct all the time, but more than they perhaps were at the start of the season. I don't know. How do you see that?
Well, I mean, the way I saw Werner today was that by half time, he had given loads of ammunition to the naysayers. He had turned the guy who scored the own goal, his name I forget,
Issa Kabore.
Kabore, inside out for the best chance, Spurs' best chance of the half. Up to that point, obviously, Son went on to hit both posts. He turned Kabore inside out and then just fluffed his lines with the goal gaping. He did the hard bit and then couldn't finish his dinner, which seems to be what Werner does. But then I thought, by the end of the game, it was like he'd been involved in both the goals. Okay, maybe it's generous to give him too much credit for the own goal, but he was there.
He was
in the right.
He had to be. That's why it went in.
Yeah, he's putting the pressure on Kabore, and that made the difference. And then he was the one who got up the left flank and put the ball in for the winner. Via a really deft touch from Johnson to set up Son. And I just think with Werner, whether you love him or hate him, you probably got to accept that he is going to deliver, a certain level of performance. And it's going to be, quite often a goal or assist coupled with some pretty hideous misses. And it's just what he does. And it's pretty clear that, he's going to be involved for Spurs. His numbers are already really, really good. But it's also pretty clear that he's just not going to be the kind of lethal finisher that perhaps Spurs need, or Spurs definitely need, in fact, in that final third. So
he doesn't seem to go missing, not missing, it's a bit harsh on Dejan Kulusevski, but you have some games with Kulusevski where he just doesn't seem very effective. And Werner can have some games where he doesn't, his finishing is really, really poor, but he always seems to scare defenders. And that is an asset that we maybe underestimate or underappreciate.
Yeah, I mean, I think his record at Chelsea, if you look back, it's almost exactly a goal or assist every other game. And I think if you look at what he's done for Spurs so far, it seems to me like he's going to do that for Spurs as well. If they sign him permanently.
You sound like you want him to sign him permanently.
I mean, I think there's a case either way. I really do. And I think every time I watch him play, I could write the piece saying, do it, and write the piece saying, don't do it.
Mm.
And I think that's you know, why Postecoglou and Levy and everyone else have, you know, paid the big bucks to make these decisions.
Yeah.
Whether they think there's more value in the market for 15 million or not.
I don't think there is more value in the market for 15 million. It's back to the sort of what I was saying about if they do buy him, that means they won't go and splash on another left side.
Yeah,
forward.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, if, but he's definitely worth the money if that's the guy you choose to pick.
I think if he signs for Spurs and plays in the team that's probably a pretty similar level to the Chelsea team he was playing in, or hopefully will be by next year, then yeah, you're looking at every other game a goal contribution. And I think the key is, if he signs, it's not to be the starting left winger, you know, when you're playing Arsenal. It is to be part of a squad of five or six really good forwards, and he's in rotation and probably playing some Champions League games, some, you know, Premier League games and some cup games, but not the big games.
No, I agree. Just back to Johnson, I mean, I think we should give him a shout out, not just for his performance, but he's obviously had a rough week with what happened with Wales. He actually came off in the 70th minute in that Wales game for Dan James, poor guy, the only guy to miss in that penalty shootout. But I know Ben Davis didn't come on today, did he? He was on.
No, he was.
But obviously, he was involved. You know, both those guys have had a rough week. You know, missing out on the Euros, but Johnson, you know. Back to what we were saying about the confidence, he doesn't seem to rush things like he did earlier in the season. Maybe too excited or too keen to make an impact. I mean, that layoff, like, you're giving Werner credit. I don't think that cross was that great. I think it was more about the layoff from Johnson, which wasn't the easiest thing to do to tee up. Some was really high quality, and I think we're starting to see, you know, what we all hoped and thought was probably possible with him, but it's perhaps taking a bit longer than some would hope. But he's a young player, so you have to give him time. But yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's another good performance under his
belt. I mean, completely. I mean, since the end of January, he's come off the bench against Brentford and scored. He came off the bench against Brighton and scored. He got two assists from the bench against Palace. And he scored against Villa, albeit as a starter. So he's in a really good run of form. I think it's starting to become really obvious why Spurs and Chelsea and others and Brentford were so keen to sign him. You know, they saw in him, you know, this quality. And I think, fans can get really excited. He's clearly kind of not shown anywhere near kind of his best yet. He's not even starting games regularly yet, but he's being really decisive in the Premier League. And I remember thinking that it was just all a bit much when he was starting kind of those 13, 14, 15 consecutive games when everyone else was injured. That wasn't really the plan, I think, when Spurs signed him, for him to be starting every week. It was for him to be gradually eased in with guys like Perisic, Solomon, you know, Richarlison, Son and others ahead of him. You know, obviously they had to change that plan during the midwinter injury crisis. And now we're kind of seeing, I think, the way that Ange, you know, would have wanted to manage him all along. And it's, you know, it's really working well. He hasn't got that pressure on his shoulders. He's playing with a bit more freedom, and he's obviously playing with confidence as well.
We mentioned Townsend earlier, obviously, because of his contribution. I mean, he had a good little spell at Spurs, but albeit for a brief period. And obviously went on to play a lot of games for England. He was just really hot for like a year or so, wasn't he? Obviously, you know, different left footer coming in off that side rather than the way Johnson plays, but both quite direct players. I mean, do you see Johnson's potential as far higher than what Townsend produced at Spurs, or is there a comparison there? Is it something to aim for?
Yeah, I've not really thought about that one. I'd like to think he could do more in his career than Townsend. I think Townsend was bombed out after that clash with a fitness coach, wasn't he, at Spurs?
It was kind of before my time.
Yeah, he was. And I think maybe Poch was looking for an excuse to get rid of him, or maybe that was, you know, a legitimate reason to kind of bomb him out. But he was a player that I felt like would have spent longer at Spurs had it not been for that. But he's a good player, isn't he? He's had a good career, but he's been a bit of a journeyman. I'd like to think that Johnson could be, you know, I don't see why he can, you know, really become one of the top wingers in the league. He's still really young. He's scoring goals. He's deciding games. And, you know, he looks like he's got a little bit of everything, you know, really good technique. He's a clever player. He saw that, you know, you mentioned the deft touch. He's quick. He's got an eye for goal. So, yeah, let's see.
So that's a big positive, Johnson. And they have won the game, and they, you know, overall their results have been pretty good, but Fulham game aside and the Wolves game. But overall, despite what Ange says, it does feel like they're labouring a bit at times to win. I mean, not labouring in the performance, but having to... They're giving themselves a hard ask by conceding early in a lot of these matches. What is it, do you think, that's going not quite clicking at the moment? Because when I look at it, I think the midfield in particular is not quite at the level it was before. I mean, Bissouma, yeah, you mentioned he got turned very easily by Townsend, and he's just not quite hit the heights yet, has he, of the first month of the season, where he was arguably the best player in the Premier League. Yeah. You know, it was ironically at Luton. I mean, you asked questions to Ange in the press conference leading up to this game about Bissouma because of, you know, obviously the connection with that particular game where he got sent off and hasn't really quite found his feet since. I mean, I can't say I was following every single movement of his for the rest of today's game, but, you know, we mentioned Maddison earlier, not quite hitting the heights yet. Saar, I thought, was quite lively. I was quite surprised when he came
up. I thought Saar was the best player for Spurs in the first half, actually. Mm. I thought he pressed really well. He made a few chances. He passed it quite crisply. I thought he was good. He faded a little bit and then was obviously replaced by Bentancur. I mean, I've got to say, you know, without wanting to like parrot what Ange has been saying, they do look a lot like a team that just doesn't have much like rhythm, I think. You know, it's been another... They had a really bad result against Fulham, then it's been another two-week break. And that's not what Postecoglou would have wanted. You know, he would have wanted to play again, you know, 3-4 days later. And yeah, I do think there's just been a lot of that this season. It has been so stop-start, as he's said a lot recently. I think there's something in that. And I'll be really interested to see kind of how they go now, because this is the first of four games across 2 weeks, basically. You've got West Ham on Tuesday, then it's Forest.
It's moved to Sunday now, isn't it?
Yeah, on the Sunday. And then it's Newcastle the following Saturday.
Newcastle away, yeah.
So there is a chance there to build up a bit of momentum and rhythm and consistency. And obviously, if it stays like this, then I think, you know, we'll have to kind of look at different reasons. But I reckon by the Newcastle game, we'll see, certainly in the front three, just a bit more kind of flow and a bit more sort of knitted together football. Because it has felt like quite clunky. And he talked today about, in the post-match press conference, about kind of Kulusevski being frustrated and kind of going in search of the ball and kind of straying from his role. And I think, you know, that probably speaks to a team that kind of isn't really sort of in sync at the moment.
Yeah, I think we should talk about the forwards a little bit. I mean, Son, first of all, you know, he's moved fifth in the list of all-time scorers for Tottenham, past Cliff Jones, 160 goals now. I think it's 398 games, many of which he would have played out wide for, albeit he was centre forward today. I mean, what a contribution. And Ange spoke nicely about him, you know, talking about his just endless drive to set standards and play as well as he possibly can in every single game. And what a spot-on attitude he has. And particularly with the long-distance travelling he regularly does for South Korea. I mean, you sort of forget that he's been away far side of the world, as always, as he generally seems to be when he goes to international break, a couple of games against Thailand, in which he scored in both games. You know, the level of commitment with that tiredness that must come in, as Ange knows well from managing Australia, having players come in from Europe, and he touched upon this as well. It's difficult to keep that up, and you've got to really give Son so much credit for that. And he stepped up and was the man again. The only thing I would say about before that happened, and obviously they went on to win the game, so all's well that ends well, I suppose. But in the first half, I was thinking they really could do with a sort of more of a target man kind of striker to break down this kind of Luton defence. You know, watching Ivan Toney play for England against Belgium on Tuesday, someone like that. And, you know, the word generally is that they probably won't go for Toney in the summer. And I don't know if that's just sort of, you know, Toney's got a year left on his deal. Nobody wants to drive the price up. So maybe that's a bit of manoeuvring ahead of the summer window. Maybe things will change then. But generally, the feedback's been that Ange prefers more versatile players up in his front three, rather so someone like, I guess, Pedro Neto might be more sort of fitting for that. But I was watching the first half, and You know, obviously they miss Kane every game because Kane is just elite. But that kind of striker, like a Tony, would, to me, seem like, particularly in these kind of games, a very useful signing. And obviously Richarlison came off the bench for a very warm reception, which was nice after what he's been through in the interview he gave the other day. And he is probably more that kind of centre forward, but not really. He's still more of a versatile player. Yeah, he can hold the ball up probably better than everybody else in the squad, but not to that level. And personally, I think to offer that different option, and the fact that I think he's just a great player all around, someone like Tony would make a lot of sense. But it doesn't feel like it's going to happen. I mean, I imagine I wouldn't be surprised if you thought differently on that.
No, I agree with you. I mean, there were a couple of times today when Spurs kind of flashed a really good ball, particularly in the first half, across the face of goal. Saar definitely did it once, and there was just kind of no one there. And I did wonder about Ange taking off Kulusevski at halftime because he wasn't attacking the back post in the same way that Vernon and Johnson do. That's a winger thing, I suppose. But yeah, they do sometimes miss a big centre forward. I think Tony would be a great signing. I think Postecoglou would love to have Tony.
He's a fantastic player.
He's such a good player. And yeah, he's like watching England this week, I did think, like, Ollie Watkins is obviously having a great season, but like England sort of struggled to attack without Kane. It looked like they didn't really know how against Brazil. They'd sort of forgotten how without him. And Tony's like the most like for like, like around. So, you know, the same would be true for Spurs. If they're looking to kind of belatedly replace Kane, then he seems like a good fit. But I reckon they probably will be after a centre forward in the summer. It's all very like cards close to chest at the moment, isn't it? But like the attack, and Postecoglou said this like so many times, hasn't he? Like the attack is not getting the bang for the buck. It's the area where there's most improvement needed. Just a couple of quick ones before we finish. I mean, you know, I wonder if there's like a case for giving Lo Celso a start over Maddison against West Ham. Maddison's so key, but like just isn't really. I mean, I suppose he was turning a little corner before the international break and he got the assist. Who was it? Was it against Palace with that like ball to the back post for Romero?
Yeah.
And then he got the goal against Villa to break the deadlock. So he has had some good moments and contributions, but still doesn't feel like the Maddison sort of pre-November.
Got kicked quite a lot today. I mean, I do wonder when I think of Tottenham generally, whether teams are sort of wising up to Ange's style, and that's partly perhaps why players like Maddison, who was so influential, dictated everything in the first half of the season. That might be partly why he's just not having as much of an effect, because teams are on him straight away. I mean, I think it was Burke and Barkley who both got yellow cards for taking him out. So that doesn't help. But, you know, with the short turnaround, and the fact that he's not being quite as influential is a perfect opportunity to give Lo Celso a go.
I'd like to see Lo Celso and Paqueta kind of picking lumps out of each other as well.
Yeah, I guess so. It depends what Lo Celso's sort of future holds, really. I mean, if Andre does want to keep him involved for next season, then it's going to be hard to sort of sell it to him if he hasn't played at all or started any games between now and the end of the season. I don't know what, you know, we'll wait to find out if he does want to keep him. But when you watch him come off the bench today and his creative instincts, not just that, he's got quite, as you say, you just referenced there, he's got a bit of needle about him as well. He's kind of player, if he could stay fit, which is always the caveat with him, could be a really useful squad player. So, yeah, I don't know. I still think Maddison's such a top player that to drop him or give him a rest is risky. But yeah, I mean, if there's one game to, well, I say if there's one game to do. I mean, West Ham away. West Ham, big game.
Yeah, it is a big game. I don't necessarily think and should or will. I'm just kind of always raising that.
Yeah.
One interesting to see, and then I guess back to Bissouma. Just, you know, whether he comes out and Bentancur comes in as the number six.
Yeah, but has he convinced in that position? I mean, Bissouma looked like so nailed on to be the guy for Ange's number six at the start of the season. But now we're getting to a point where, you know, he needs to step up his game to sort of prove that he's the long-term solution for there. And Bentancur hasn't really been trusted in that position either.
No, he still feels like a bit more of a Saar alternative, which is what happened today.
Albeit has been playing with a broken toe. So,
yeah, you know, yeah. Play to him. Okay, any other business before we wrap up?
Just one quick question about Barkley. I mean, it sounds like he might be, it's a bit of a question mark of whether his contract is up at the end of the season. He is 30, and she was asked about him in the pre-match press conference because there was some rumours about him being interested when he was at Celtic, and he played those down. But I don't know, like, it doesn't really seem like the new age young Tottenham kind of signing, but on a free transfer, would you be, as a squad player, particularly if someone like Lo Celso left and he's English, would you be half tempted?
Yes, not something I've ever crossed my mind, but yeah, maybe. I mean, if, like, he wants to stay in the Premier League, he's obviously having a really, really good season, and he did impress me today. Like, he had that shot in the second half that Vicario kind of clawed away. Yeah, I don't see it. He doesn't seem to be the kind of profile of players Spurs have been going after. But then they've also, you know, they're not shy of being canny about a free transfer, are they?
And especially
with the homegrown issue.
And just PSR generally, even though, you know, Tottenham are in a much better place than most clubs on that, which might actually, you know, someone like Barkley might benefit massively from that in this summer. Maybe more clubs than normal might be interested in him because they can't afford to splash money on other players.
Isn't it an interesting thought?
But just one other thing. Yeah. Dragozin, obviously, it's his first full debut at home for Tottenham. I thought he had a bit of a shocker, to be honest, against Fulham. That he got the runaround by Rodrigo Muniz, who apparently scored a worldie today for Fulham, and he's in great form. But I thought today he was pretty good. Quite good on the ball. And there was a nice little run in the first half where he sort of Van de Ven-esque driving it out of defence. But it struck me as a player who's really very much getting to grips of fitting in this back four at the moment and probably will drop out for the West Ham game. So it's not easy. But what did you make of his performance?
Yeah, pretty similar, really. I mean, I thought he looked a little bit uncertain in the first few minutes. Obviously, Luton had scored in that time. But he grew into it, I thought. The problem is with not having a left footer on that side is the way Spurs play. It was kind of obvious at times that he was quite keen to turn back on his right, and you do kind of want another left footed player to sort of drive out in the same way that Van de Ven does when he's not there. I think obviously with the approach, with like the playing out, you know, being such a core element of it, there are going to be so many times when the defender's got the ball, they're being pressed. And, you know, they've got to be very technically strong. And if you're kind of playing on your unfavoured side, like, it is just a bit more difficult. So,
do you presume, based on, you know, the fact that the other week he said that he would still look for another centre-back in the summer, that it would be a left-sided
one? Yeah, I think it would be a left-footer, yeah. But he loves Ben Davis, doesn't he? But I think, I wonder if Davis just is going to be the doggy kind of cover. I don't think Davis is going anywhere based on what Ange said yesterday about kind of him having plenty of time left
You
know, as a player. So, not that I don't want to speculate on the future of Ben Davis. No. I do want to get home.
Yeah.
So let's wrap it up there. Yeah, thank you for listening. Always appreciate your feedback. So please give us a rating and review, etc. And we will be back with Marcus and the other Tom, hopefully, for a fuller pod midweek. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.